practical, if you want, musar, not musar, just plain common sense. Now open for questions and answers. Rabbi Talman said, he quoted, I think it's quoted by the Shalaf, I remember, Mi shemtziya ta musag ben azmanim atid liten tadin. Whoever invented the concept of ben azmanim will pay the price of the Vital Torah he caused. Rabbi Tal said, ben azmanim I have nothing against, but Mi shemtziya ta musag sof azman, whoever invented the concept of sof azman, for that I do sign on to this statement. The reason I'm saying this is, on the one hand, since many of you were in Poland, but Sof HaZman before Pesach was, Baruch Hashem did not suffer from the Sof HaZman malaise, and it was very, with the sense of energy and excitement which we had here in Sof HaZman it's encouraging for the learning Bichlal, not only for the future, but for the past as well. And with the problems of Osman, besides just regular fatigue and the sense that you're about to go home, is also, if a person is waiting for the game to be over, is waiting for the Zman to be over, the sign is not enjoying himself even in the middle. If a person is enjoying himself, he doesn't want time to expire. If a person, though, is suffering, if he's bored, so he's expecting time to be over. And in fact, we started Gittin for 6-7 months, and then both the Chazara went well, and the days afterwards, it's a sign that people felt engaged by Gittin, and they didn't consider Gittin to be some kind of burden or some kind of problem. They had a faster to get rid of it, the better, but rather they felt that it was engaging and important. Secondly, we study Iyun all the time for reasons which I think are valid and important. However, it's crucial to make every so often to bridge the gap between the Iyun and the Ramban and the Rashbah and Halacha L'maisa, especially so in Gittin, which nowadays is one of the most vexing and crucial interactions between Halacha and society at large, be it Eretz Yisrael, where it's complicated by the factors of the interaction between state and religion, being a chutzlar, it's where society and religion, and the issues are extremely important. And at the end of the day, to study Gittin for a whole year and not to be aware what's going on, halacha l'maisa, would be a major gap in your not in your knowledge, but in your ability to apply halacha l'maisa. And halacha l'maisa is not only how exactly where do you sit in the sukkah exactly, or what can you outside the sukkah? It's also many of these issues which have to deal with life at its more basic elements, and therefore the ability to deal with these issues is a point. Whoever was in Poland for other valid reasons should make an effort to catch up and find out the various issues which we dealt with here, because I think they are important. However, now to go from Sof HaZman to Sof HaShana. It's April 30th, which means that tomorrow is May 1st, which means that the clock is running down to June, etc. And I go back to Rav Mital's statement. In a sense, the way a person learns now, it's a reflection of the whole year. So I recognize a certain amount of fatigue and etc. But nevertheless, a person can say to himself, if only 6 or 8 or 10 or 12 weeks left, and I have to do my best to utilize them. If you have 100 days, well, right, you miss an evening. If you have one day, you miss an evening, you've lost 50% of your time. The less time you have left, the more it's important to utilize it and to really try to bring it to the last drop and to enjoy every moment and to utilize it. Secondly, and therefore, which I ask myself, how can I utilize the time best now? The more that the clock is running out, let me make my best effort to appreciate and engage myself, particularly regarding Masechet Brachot. On the one hand, Masechet Brachot, on the one hand, we are very familiar with it. more so than with we said Yevamos, we studied Baba Kama. On the other hand, the familiarity is both an opportunity and a danger. And the person says, well, I know brachot anyways, I don't have to prepare that much, I can get away without preparing. I know that we say Kesha in the morning, I know we say Kesha in the evening, I know that it's Bichad Gola Tfila, I don't have to be, so that's one way of going about it, and so it's spring, Hanitzanim Neu Ba'aretz, Eta Zamir Higia, V'kol Ator Nishma Ba'etzeinu, that the birds are chirping, the baseball season started, and it's only brachos anyways, so I can get away with it. Or precisely exactly the opposite. Dafka, because you're familiar with brachot, it's a tremendous opportunity to go to the level beneath, to dig deeper, and to delve into the foundations of the Masechet. The fact you have a head start by having this basic knowledge, you have to acclimate yourself to the concepts, to the reality, and the fact you're very familiar with it, allows you a head start to go deeper. And more than that, there's a tremendous musar. It takes something you're familiar with. All of a sudden you realize that there's so much more than meets the eye. In other words, that the same Kriyat Shema that you've been changed to change of 3 or 4 or whatever, all of a sudden you realize that when you peel it away, look how much depth and look how much how many rich sources exist about Kriyat Shema itself. And I've been speaking about Kriyat Shema the last 3-4 shiurim that I've given, and even though I think we're far from exhausting the topic, and there's still a lot more to learn, and because we're familiar with this, it makes it's a much more interesting experience of discovery. You're not discovering something it's one thing to discover something that you've never seen, like you go sightseeing some exotic land. It's something else to discover the exotic in the everyday, in the familiar, and to see what's there which you are unaware that's there. It's a much deeper level of discovery, and I think much more exhilarating one as well. Additionally, it also translates, it should translate at least, into everyday practice. I'd like to be clear in this regard. Don't live in the illusion that if you study the Sukkot Kriyat Shema, you'll be transformed. From now on, your tefillah will be perfect. Well, every dad will be like an Eli. It won't be like that. But it can be improved. In other words, if you take the concepts that we're talking about, and you take and you apply them to your tefillah, it won't go from 0 to 100. You won't flip it from A to Z immediately, but it will certainly improve and enhance, and will give you tools to make your tefillah improve gradually, to make it deeper, more intense, and it's a huge opportunity. There's always this dilemma: study things we don't know, or study things we know, and study Nashim Zikir, study Moed, and we decided to do Brachot after deliberating other options. It's a huge opportunity. As I said before, so if you're near the home stretch, and the question really is, do you do your best now to utilize the opportunity to dig deep into Brachot, and the fact that whoever can study in the Zman, obviously better, but even if a person is leaving earlier, the less time he has, the more the greater the obligation to utilize it and to make sure that his time is well spent. So the thing I can say is, we finished Gittin, I thought beautifully, and Zod Hashem, let's do Santa Brachot, and let's make sure the Kayitz is the Kayitz and the approaching home stretch is an opportunity and not chas v'shalom, so to sink and to lose focus, but rather to increase your focus and to make it more intense and better. So that's the trying to divrei musar to questions. Bakasha.
Having in mind the machlok and masechet tanit about whether a nazir is a chute or a kadosh, because he's a mitzar himself. Can I hear some of your thoughts? The Kiddusha of Nazirut and perhaps other forms of abstinence.
Yes, there was, look at the Netziv. He has a short passage there in Hamikdavah, which is very nice. In a nutshell, there's 2 dinim in Nazirut, and he talks there about, the person who goes, I'll say as follows. You have in the Tanakh, you have Shimshon HaNazir and Shmuel. And without giving shirkolin on Masechet Nazir, Nizirutim Shon is halachically different than other Nizirut. If you remember from Erev Hashanah, I feel Nizirutim Shon shekibalti alatzmi. So Nizirutim Shon has different halachic requirements as well. And he says like this: Shirshon knew that he had tremendous yitzarim, and his desires and his impulsive nature were extremely strong, and he was very unrefined, if you want, and therefore by Shimshon he needed restraining. He had to restrain himself. He had to desist from what maybe others may have been a good idea. He definitely had to restrain himself because he was prone to a certain mindset. Because Rav, for whatever reasons, gave him a lot of energy and strength, and over there you kind of bend the stick one way. The other model is here, Shmuel. Shmuel is also a Nazir, and Shmuel is a Nazir not because you had, it's not Sumera, it's rather a Seitov. There's no doubt that in the Psukim, I think the Ramban's approach and Nazir's of Kadosh is much more convincing. And it's in the Tzitzis idea that there may be two models is even more convincing. Two more brief remarks about that. Because Baruch Hu created, or it's like this, in the Middle Ages, in Chazal, there's much less tension with pleasure than you have later on in the Middle Ages. Chazal, well, it's like this, about eating and drinking, they have very little negative to say. They talk about, but there's no great tension involved. Like look at the word Tanit about Tzudim Afsekes. You can, how much do you drink? How much wine do you drink? Everything's taken in stride. And even about sexual relationships, Chazal are not too negative. There was a rule points, I think, correctly that here and there there may be a dual strand. There may be two approaches, but the predominant approach does not view it negatively. When you go to the Middle Ages, you get a whole different landscape. Over there, pleasure is negative, and you eat, you drink, your sexual relationships only for survival, in a sense, for the survival of the individual, or survival of the species. At least major and representative medieval figures, and it cuts across both rationalist and Mekubali. You get the same message in the Rambam, and in the Meiri, if you want to represent the rationalists, you get the same message with the Ramban, who represents the, look at the Ramban, Parashat Shavuot, Achrimos, the Ramban, even though it's a Mekubal, and mystics, we tend to think are more, looking more positively at these phenomena. Not so. In other words, in the Middle Ages, almost everyone is negative, with a few exceptions. But broadly speaking, nowadays, we have a whole different mindset. In other words, we tend to view matter and the like as being much more positive. Kiddush HaChol, Kiddush HaChomer. And to the best of my impression, broadly speaking, it's not a Haredi or modern Orthodox issue. And we talk about Haredi as well as modern Orthodox. And when Haredim go to Chasen Kala classes, and they're told more of the same things that modern Orthodox people are told in terms of the legitimacy of pleasure and the sexual relationships, and this, I think Haredi are more aesthetic in the way they eat Shabbos meals. They don't buy less coke than the modern Orthodox. I think it cuts across to both. It's a modern mindset. Personally, I don't with it. To put it differently, because Baruch Hu v'gayru kimet kol asher asav yinei tov me'od. Because Baruch Hu created the world. Now, created within the world various kochot. And these kochot and phenomena, these kochot include all kinds of things which have both potential and danger. Curiosity. Without curiosity can be very damaging. I'm not even talking about that the kid is curious and he sticks his finger into an electric socket or whatever. But you can talk about, you just waste your time. If you go online and just read, I spend all day long just reading, following curiosities or reading newspapers from A to Z and you never end up learning anything. So your curiosity has done you in. And the other thing, though, I think it's clear to all of us that if we get no curiosity and nothing would interest us whatsoever, we get nowhere. In other words, no one would be sitting here in this room and be learning in Yeshiva for a year if he wasn't created with curiosity. So Elamai, you have to balance it. You have to channel it to a certain direction. You have to have certain checks and balances. Nevertheless, at the end of the day, because Rachel created curiosity, it's good. He created loneliness. So what's more, being lonely can be very distressing, can be very dangerous. But nevertheless, at the end of the day, the Rev wrote the loneliness for me. To explain my loneliness, nevertheless, is spiritually valuable. And so on and so forth. And thinking about man's social nature, and if you go on the whole checklist of all these things, and broadly speaking, I think they are, if properly applied, they're valuable. Look, we should look at any koach in a sense as being negative. Look, the Mistos Yisharim describes life as an obstacle course. Because Rav Pidi Bolo Hazeh, and really the whole goal of Olam Hazeh is to navigate the obstacle course. And so why is food tasty? So it's really a temptation. And of course, you can find it in medieval Christian sources as well, but take Mistos Yisharim, it's the 18th century. And life is really just navigating these obstacles. That's why I think, you know, it's not the case that we really believe that curiosity, loneliness, etc., etc., etc. Now, it's true also about, quote-unquote, no capabilities, but also desires. Why do you like to eat and drink? Because without that, you won't survive. If you look long later at old people who lost their appetite, their desire to eat, they have no cheshek. To get them to eat, just for the nutrition and the nourishment, it's kris yamsuf. You know, to force yourself to eat when you can't eat, it's extremely difficult. Now, if I were to give you something to eat, which had no taste whatsoever, it was like chewing bark, it would be very difficult for you, even though you knew people go for all kinds of medical checks, medical checkers, and they're told to drink all kinds of liquids that to enable the doctor to do that later on some kind of a procedure. It's very difficult. Why? You know, it's extremely important that you drink this and so he can then do whatever, colonoscopy, whatever he does. But it's very difficult to drink. You know, it's difficult for us to eat and drink without cheshev, without an appetite. I say, you see, low lane, old people who've lost their appetite, they need the nourishment and they can't bring us to eat because they have no appetite. So, because Rachel created the reason that we, because Rachel created us in such a way, in order that we should survive. Now, the problem is, you could overdo it. And then, or more than you can also misappraise it. You can consider it to be too, if you don't give it the proper place in the scheme of things, so the means become an end, the end becomes a mean, etc. Drinking kal v'chomer. It's true, I have about sexual relationships as well. They, first of all, without that, we won't survive. At the end of the day, the design of the appetites would enable the species to survive. This is what David the Melech says, it's right. David the Melech says, I was created in sin, but the world's created that people should be created. Additionally, achila and shtiya, you can use it to enhance experiences. You know, if you, be at a wedding meal, be at a Shabbos meal, be it just you want to sit with someone and have a conversation, so you give them cake and coffee, whatever, you're able to use this to enhance relationships. Sexual relationships called v'chomer, that they, physical expressions of intimacy, both express and enhance emotional relationships, etc. So that's why, broadly speaking, they're positive. The Nazir, either it could be a person who saw himself like Shimshon, he suffers from an imbalance, and then you have to restrain. And there are always times in life when you have to restrain. Or opposite, despite all that I said, what I'm really saying is that physical expressions or physical elements can often express spiritual and emotional needs or achievements. But they're physical, nevertheless. You have individuals who I think are extraordinary who live. It reminds me, in other words, the fact, I'll say the following. The fact that a certain individual is different than us doesn't mean that we're doing is negative. But it means that we can never see him as being living life, which is more kadosh, which in the sense of being in the presence of Kadosh Baruch Hu, may be greater by him. But it can only be done if you're sincere. In other words, if you lack that ability, you know, so you're insincere and it's worse. And so if an individual, and I think it's limited to very specific individuals, if you have a particular individual who really is more detached from earthly needs, The physical elements don't appear. He feels Kosh Baruch Hu's presence staring at him much more so than. I'll give you an example. I once spent a Shabbos near Tikar in Ufruf. They put us. It was a family. They had us stay with some neighbor. The neighbor had. He had his house overlooked Harabayit, and in the bathroom there was a window overlooking Harabayit. It was extremely unpleasant going to the bathroom because it's like Kosh Baruch Hu was looking at you. It's like, you know, or I mean, I had a friend who went, a girl once who lived also in the same place, and you know, and said, I had a cup of tea with Kosh Baruch Hu. Now I felt that only in the Atika, where you know, you mum should talk about Harabayit. The person is more Kadosh and more, so he feels also in a Fula, or he feels Fula in Tennessee. That the Kosh Baruch Hu was staring him all the time. So you feel awkward with the physical needs, not only across from Harabayit, you feel awkward any place he's in. So those kind of individuals, I really think, being a Zir makes sense. But how many individuals like that are? And Tzid has a wonderful tshuva. Anyone who's never read this, I highly recommend reading it. It's called Al Yamin Ve'al Simol. It's Tzid's Shu'ut Chelek Aleph Siman Mem Daled. And he has some nasty remarks about high yeshiva high schools, but nevertheless, you should read it anyways. The whole tshuva is Tochor Tzufa Ava. The question he deals with is the following. Can you talk about right wing and left wing Judaism? Because the Pasuk says, Orchim bimina bismola osher v'chavod. So apparently there's right, there's the right side and the left side. And now, his major point is, somewhere, it's a response to a newspaper article in the 19th century, but someone said that the small, the left, are the non-Orthodox. So it seems that's ridiculous, because if you talk about orichimim bimina bismala osher b'chavod, so the small is within the system. And then he goes and says, if you have yamin and small, there must be merkaz. In other words, there's centrist orthodoxy, there's right-wing orthodoxy, and left-wing orthodoxy. Now, he doesn't talk about it. So what's the categories he creates? So it's like this. That, and now folks find right wing as opposed to centrist. It's like this. Orichimim bimina, he describes a person who is, as individually, he has a very high religious sensibility. He's very, he feels Kosh Baruch Hu's presence all the time. And he lives Kadosh, like a Nazir. He lives, as opposed to the centrist, who's the person engaged with society. Deeply religious, but engaged with society, engaged with life, he understands life. It's not someone who's a parush and like this. These nazirim, these kedoshim, these holy people have their place, and their individual holiness is extremely important. But they can't lead. They don't create the norm. The leaders, the people who have to set the standards, those who can influence, impact, are the ones who are involved in life. Those who are over the Hashem to engage in life. So he says, it's legitimate to engage Hashem by withdrawing from life. It's legitimate. It's bimina, orchim bimina. But he says that the Derech HaMelech is not to withdraw from life, it's to engage in life, it's to it's over the Hashem through life. So what he's essentially saying is, both are valid tracks, and each has its advantage, but the way to utaker olam achut shakai, and the way to create Am Yisrael and Am B'nai Torah is to engage and not to withdraw. However, we all benefit from the fact that we have certain figures who are saintly and are withdrawn. He says this in a nutshell in the Parshat Bo, if I remember. And then he also says that there are times in history when you can only be in the Merkaz, you can't withdraw. There are the times when there's value. I don't spend my life doing Tikkun Chatzot in the Kotel. I feel good that the few people who do it every night. In other words, the fact that we have a few people who, if you go to Kotel once, you know, at the wee hours, you'll see the few people are sitting and saying Tilim of the Churban. So I don't want to devote my life to that, but I think it's good for Am Yisrael that we have such figures. You know, people withdrawn from life, as long as it's just, you know, a reasonable percentage, it's good for everybody. You know. But what?
Do you think you have to say Hagoma if you flew over SD?
Well, the Rav Paskin, that a person is not in danger, he shouldn't say Hagoma. He thought, no, I think it's the Rav. My father's really passing like that. You know, I tell you this, you know, objectively, there's no great danger, and the fact that the pasuk says your day hayam bo niyot, it's not just a cuss of, you know, crossing a sea. It's crossing a sea once upon a time is very dangerous, and I think it's self-evident to us why crossing a sea 3,000 years ago was dangerous. And nowadays, presumably it's not. If a person feels subjective danger, first, I think Chilas HaDerech, yes, but Hagomel, no. Because Hagomel is not, you know, if a person is not an objective danger, but, you know, he just feels scared, I don't think Hagomel should be. But look, there are many other poskim who, you know, anyone who says Hagomel, Yesh Tam Alismof, you know, he has many contemporary poskim who, you know, who he can, whose lead he can follow. He's not, he has authorities to rely upon. This is probably a more general question, if you want. You know, cases in which the reality is changing, how do we translate this nowadays into contemporary halacha? In some cases you say, even though the reason or the rationale changed, the halacha remains in effect. Af pi shebatel hatam, take one example, or like the chutzlikim, kiddush and shul. That's one of the classic examples. That there's no one's eating the shul anymore, but nevertheless, we still make kiddush because it was, even though the reason has disappeared, the takana remains in effect. In other cases, we don't say like that. And you have many machlokot, machlokot about kiddush and shul, for instance, machlokot chalav akum, etc. Always boil down to this question. Whether the change of circumstance, and it was, whether the halach itself was only was the individual case, and that remains in effect always, or you follow the rationale. Regarding Tzilat HaDerech, or excuse me, Hagomel, it seems to be reasonable that it should be like this, but those who paskin differently, that's what they're assuming. And also goes back to a difference in approach regarding how much can we nowadays change. I'll give you one quick example. The Gemara says that if a baby runs a fever, you don't do a bris milah, except you have to wait 7 days. Why? The Gemara was, at the time of the Gemara, it's advanced medicine. They were afraid of an infection. The fever was a sign of an infection. You're not going to perform surgery on a kid with an infection. So the Gemara said, wait 7 days. If there's no fever, 7 days, it's a sign that the infection's been healed. So nowadays, you can do a blood test. So my father paskins that, you know, if the baby has a blood test and there's no infection, to do mila, the sooner the better, because it's a mitzvah. Most well Yerushalayim won't touch a baby who's had fever in the last 7 days, regardless of whether they had a blood test. And so on. So, just another example. Yogi Chavar is a famous idea that, because it's just a, just a derech, not a gomel, that the ear is not a derech, but, you know, you don't make a bracha on the derech, you make on the cheft of the derech, you make a bracha on the trip.
In the ideal halachic society, would a woman's place be in the home? And assuming that the answer is yes, because of Kofluda, Basel, Klima, and things like that, how would halacha justify and would halacha recommend the practice of many Orthodox women nowadays who take jobs and live in somewhat more public?
I don't think that in an ideal world you have to say necessarily that she have to be at home. I'm not saying there are any such opinions. The Rambam has very strong statements on this. I think in an ideal halachic world, a woman should be able to capitalize or to utilize her abilities to be with Hashem and to realize her God-given gifts. To the best of her abilities. Now that includes takes into account the fact that that a family needs a home which is comfortable, pleasant, happy, nourishing environment, emotional and psychological for the children. That there is a difference between men and women in terms of the desire for warmth and tender care. Let me be clear. I think men have certain things to give that women also. You know, it's not that women have the men and women have different capabilities to transmit to children. And the child who has both a good father and a good mother is getting the best of both worlds. It's because both the male and the female each have what to offer. Obviously, if a person can live a full and satisfying, you know, he can have a very happy childhood without that, if circumstances dictate that. But optimally, you want both parents, and therefore, so part of taking into account what an ideal society will be is the fact that that the child is receiving the proper support and happiness and comfort at home. I think they need to stay at home just for the sake of staying at home. The point to stay at home is for the sake of helping the children. In other words, a couple who's the kids are out of the house, or that they're, or they just got married. I don't see any reason for them to stay, for the woman to stay at home necessarily. In other words, I think it's an ideal cocktail, but it means depends on the circumstances, depends on society, depends what the role of women in that society is. In a society in which women have a mature place, and where society views them as human beings, and not only as a woman to chase after, but can treat them properly. That's a reason why they should not, because Baruch Hu gave them gifts, and they should utilize those gifts. I would certainly encourage women to work. Now, each person, there are many ways to do it. And I don't want to be dogmatic and say you have to do it this way as opposed to that way. But what you need is a certain, to put it differently, is a society in which the male-female element is emphasized and not the personal individuality. But that's a reason why women shouldn't exercise individuality in an ideal society as well, provided she's able to balance it with other things.
What's your opinion on a woman giving a
Zvah
Torah or
Shir
to men in a shul?
I just trying to figure out what land I'm about to step on. which shul are you talking? I mean, it's in theory, I'm fine with it. In practice, it depends on the society, depends on the shul, and in other words, there are different dynamics involved. You know, every show is different, and you have to ask yourself where and what. In a certain show, it's scandalous. You go to Meir Shearim, so I think it should not be done, because tzlius has a subjective element to it, and tzlius also means that society has to be a certain place, a certain point. In other words, certain things that will happen at Lon Shavuot, which are trivial, in Meir Shearim they may be scandalous. And if it's scandalous, therefore they should not be done. Because tzniut, it doesn't matter, we're talking about tzniut now of a dress code, we're talking about tzniut of public appearances and the like, have a subjective element to them. And it's a relative concept, tzniut. It's not absolute. That, you know, you can come with a ruler and measure everything necessarily. And so therefore, I think depends to a large degree on the circumstances there. What's been the norm until now? I think you need, if you want, an evolutionary model in which things change gradually, and not a revolutionary model. And therefore, I might even talk about external considerations, like, will it upset the Balabati? Will it upset the Rav? And I get into a big fight with the local rabbi. Are you enraging? Remember, I'm not talking about the political, which I think are important in the community. Additionally, I have the following. I don't know if I would do it in the middle of davening, but I think the separation between men and women during davening, I think, should be kept. In other words, I would not have between before Muslim, I would think that woman should not speak. Not because she has nothing to offer, but you know, a shul is a segregated setup. The reasons you can read, if you can read that there's a whole book which talks about the topic of mechitza, and the Rebbe's a tshuva over there. Whatever the reasons are, the segregation within shul I think is an important concept, and I would not want to do things which would make the shul a non-segregated area or a non-segregated atmosphere. So therefore, it wouldn't bother me after Musa. It would bother me before Musa. After Musa, shul's over. Assuming that's the way it's perceived. But what's more, in other words, it would also depend on the local community. In certain circumstances, I would ask myself, what does this community need? Number two, I would only do it if I thought it was being done because people thought this woman was knowledgeable, intelligent, and had what to offer. Just to make a statement that women speak as well as men, I don't buy into that. In other words, I would gladly listen to a woman giving a good share if I thought she was giving a good share. That I would not choose just because she happens to be female as opposed to male. Some I won't choose a man because it's a man either. In other words, you have to choose a person to speak based on qualifications. You wouldn't go to a doctor based upon their gender. You would go based upon their knowledge. You wouldn't read an article in a scientific journal based upon the gender of the writer. You would ask yourself, what's the level of knowledge? Do they know what they're talking about? Do they not know what they're talking about? And I think Torah should be no worse. I wouldn't mind going to a woman to Paschal Shiloh if I thought she was competent and capable. But I wouldn't want to go to a woman just because she's a woman. So I wouldn't go to a man just because he's a man either. So that would be a second. And three, there was something not to make a statement. There was even if she's competent and knowledgeable, I wouldn't go just to make a statement. If she's knowledgeable and it's done because some of you want a knowledgeable man to speak, you want a knowledgeable woman to speak, it wouldn't bother me after show. With Jerry Davin, I think it would bother me. But things may change over time, I can tell you. I think it's an intrinsic or inherent it's a question, but no, that's in the same, in a nutshell. Yes, sir.
There's a lot of talk in Australia at the moment, particularly among politicians and people, about introducing.
Politicians and people, two different.
about introducing a gay marriage act into the law in Australia. I'm sure it's not a topic in many other countries. Now, obviously, homosexuality is asur according to Torah law. However, if there was to be, in the case of a referendum of some sort in Australia, what I wanted to know is whether a Jew, based on that, had some kind of field to vote no, or whether, because there's nothing halakhic about the marriage that they're trying to legislate, there's some room to.
Did you ask here? What? About the Amud, I can't tell you. The Kapri, I don't know where it is. The Daf is the Bam the Amud. Do you have it there?
It's a waste, boys.
Yeah. Yeah, Shazan's place. Again, it's for you, don't worry. You find it? Pneuma Goyim. Maybe I'm with Beza. Find it? Vavam and Aleph, I remember. I mean, listen. Yeah, okay, here it is. Just take it. Just to get into that one. Yeah. Yeah, okay. The work with Dash, the Pasuk in Zechariah, the Pasuk, Vidom, Eilu, Shloshim, Tzadikei, Umot HaOlam, Shumot HaOlam, Mitkamim, Mehem. Ula Amar, Eilu, Shloshim, Mitzvot, Shkulam, Bnei Noach, Ve'ein, Mekamim, Shloshah. So we're going to 30 mitzvahs, and we're kind of 3. Achat, She'ein, Kotvim, Ktuva, Lizcharim, two others are Echad she'en meshokim b'samed makulim v'echad she'mechavnit ha'torah. So Rashi says here, she'en kuvim k'tuva li zecharim דאפל פי שחשודים במשכב זכר ומייחדים להם זכר תשמישם, אין נוהגים קלות ראש מצווה זו כל כך שיכתבו להם כתובה. What she's saying is, maybe homosexuals must have gone, but they don't institutionalize it. Words, even though they're over Mishkav Zachar, they don't institutionalize it, they're not Ksuva. In words, yes, do I think we're opposed to gay marriage? Absolutely. Because we should be concerned about the morality of Goyim. We should be concerned about, if you want, the Tzelem Elokim of Goyim. Part of Tzelem Elokim has to do with the family and the institution of the family. And we should certainly care about what goes amongst Goyim. When my father gave a husband on the Babichir Rebbe, that was one of the main points he made. And the Rebbe, unlike many others, he cared also about the morality of Goyim and not only of the Jews. For example, he was for more interaction between religion and state in the United States. Even though Jews are traditionally against it, because religion is Christianity. The more you separate religion and state, the easier it is for the Jews not to have Christian practices imposed upon them. The Rebbe was for prayer in schools. Why? He said, for Jews it would be easier if there was no prayer in schools, but for the world at large, for the Goyim, it's better they should pray. Or for the Kodesh Baruch Hu, it's better the Goyim should pray. In other words, he took into account the Goyim's spiritual needs, not only has it impact upon us. And I think the same is true. To say none of the fact that what happens by Russian society sooner or later trickles down to a Jewish society, that's fine, but we should really care. And things like this, homosexuality, besides with the problem that if homosexual relations are legitimized, so eventually only children, besides that issue, and the fact that it is the following. The Torah answers homosexuality, the way it answers Nida, the way it answers various cases of incest, various arayos, like everything we read in the parasha 2 days ago. Now, the Torah, all those things are Yisuri Bia. And you can say Yivamos, and you can study, take the Ram Hilchos Yisuri Bia, and you can get a checklist of everything that's answered. That's one issue. There's another issue, it's totally different. Which is not what's technically an aveira, right? if a person's balanida, it's like he eats not kosher. But something else, which is at the moment at least, homosexuality. So a person can be nirshal in mishkav zachar. Now, so that's like being nirshal chilul Shabbos. That's like being nirshal in machoz asuros. It's basically no different than not observing any other mitzvah. It's a kares, so it's similar to eating chayla, eating dam, and nida, Shabbos, etc. It's another problem, it's totally different, which is when you try to basically redefine what relationships are about, what the family is about, and it's more than that. Homosexual culture begins at least. Not only from a question of who do you live with in private. There's a movement which encouraged promiscuity, which basically tried to do away with any inhibitions, any prohibitions. In other words, the problem wasn't simply that a man wanted to live with a man. The problem was, or to put it differently, why is homosexuality an identity? We talk about discrimination against various groups. Why they're a group? Essentially, it's a group of people who organize themselves around the common denominator of their sexuality. In other words, if you ask them, what's a human being? So, a religious group claims that the common denominator, or the defining characteristic, is religious belief. You could talk at times, based on ethnic identity. Which means, you see, the group you come from is your identity. Homosexuals, their sexual identity is their identity. So this thing is a huge difference between a person who happens to have a sexual act with a member of the same sex. That's just an act like any other act. So someone comes and says, this is my identity. And we say, yes, my identity, my sexuality is my identity. I think that goes against everything we believe in. We don't believe, despite what I said before, that we recognize that sexuality has its place as part of human experience, it is still not the defined characteristic. Defined characteristic are things which are much more basic and much more eternal and much more spiritual. And for dealing with the teacher Mital's codes, this is what we call Baal Peor. That you celebrate, physical, your physical attraction as, or you celebrate nature and natural attraction as not as something to be channeled and to be dealt with, but to be championed. He's when he tells people about Baal Peor, meaning natural impulses per se. That's about homosexuality, the same thing. I think there's a huge moral and religious difference between a person who's a functioning member of society, and he lives wherever he lives, that's one thing, and a person who basically is engaged in, it's part of the gay movement, or is engaged in homosexual activity and the like, because, I mean, active political activity, things like that. Because that becomes your identity. And it's a whole different thing. So the person, I get to come across, if we had groups of people whose identity was Chilul Shabbos, you talk about rights from Chilul Shabbos as an organized group, that would also be problematic. But here you have, basically, it's a halakhic problem, but it's more halakhic. So I think it's also from a human perspective. To make your sexuality a defining characteristic is a corruption of human nature. It's a characteristic, and what's more, it's an important experience, but it's not the defining characteristic. And you come to, so therefore, it's upending, if you want, the institution of family and relationships. And additionally, I say, the principle organization is, it's not something my salvation. It's not something my salvation. I have nothing, I think it's anything more severe or worse. The Yisrael Mishkav Zachar than the Chilul Shabbos. Chilul Shabbos is probably worse in many regards. But it's when it becomes a movement and an identity, that's when things change. I think we should certainly be opposed to Goyim doing that. Goyim are human beings, and this is a question of human nature, not only a question of a halacha. And I think we do care about what the institution was. High level of what?
Security risk. For example, like the Jerusalem during the Intifada, they wrote now, or there's a community around the world, where a person has to stay, you know, that they're just walking like a couple blocks from getting on a local bus?
It depends what you consider the level of danger. In other words, broadly speaking, the Yerushalmi says that even though Tosafot Derech normally is only when you take a trip of a mile or whatever, a meal, if I remember, and it's kilometer more or less, if it's Makom Sakana, so you say it, you know, immediately. It depends how great you consider the danger.
During the Intifada, when there was a number of bus bombings per week,
wasn't it never a week? I mean, it's like this. There was a lot of tragedy here during the Intifada. It wasn't a few bombings a week, though. I think let me just say in general, when you compare danger, it's a comparison, it's relative. In other words, all these places are more dangerous, less dangerous. None of them are the kinds of danger you describe. I mean, you have to be a mountain of war for the kinds of levels of dangers you're describing. But besides that, I'll say like this. If a person feels in danger, I think if it's yes. How much? Listen, some people said to us that they're here, you dabba shamar, you didn't, others didn't. Those who said I understood, those who didn't, I understood. I'll tell you, I sent my daughters to birthday parties in Yerushalayim during the Intifada. So, I don't know if I was living further down, I don't know. But, on the other hand, yes, were people nervous? Yes. Were people nervous driving at some point? The answer is absolutely yes. So people were nervous driving. They should say to us a derech. Look, my wife says to us a derech, you know, she's very nervous because of a car accident, Israeli drivers. I'm less nervous, I get into a car, I don't feel threatened. She does, so I think it's legitimate, I do think just the subjective element is a consideration. One or two more there.
Go to
it's a naughty issue. K-N-O-T-T-T-Y. Let's say the following. First of all, if you come to me and say, I have no opinion, I have no position, passing from me. So I'll say you don't make a gomel. But I'm speaking here, and I assume that people say a gomel, and that they have rabbi who passes, they have the local rabbi passing for them, so I'm saying, no problem with that either, because they're rabbi passing for them. So you have to differentiate between, so that's point number one. In other words, if you ask me what my opinion, I have an opinion. My opinion is not to say. And then we go to the other question. Look, how does a person decide a shiloh for himself? If he's a balabas. So he has the following options. Option number one is to choose a rav. That could be his local shul rabbi. It could be his Rosh Hashiva. It could be someone else he respects, admires, whatever. He could belong to a group, like, for instance, he could think that Rav Avadia Yosef should be the posek, follow at Israel, or whatever. You choose, you can hear a Moshe Pass follow America, whatever you choose certain criteria, and you follow that person throughout. And then, you know, he's my posek, he's Aser L'Charav. And then you go and ask him, and, you know, but of course you have to, like the Gemara says, you have to do Kula L'Chumra. You can do Kikule B'Shilel, Kikumra B'Shilel, or Kikule B'Shamai. You can't have it both ways. You can't do Kechumre Besil and Kechumre Beshamai or Kekule Besil, Kekule Beshamai. That's one way of going about doing it. And it's certainly legitimate. I think it's legitimate also if you choose ad hoc, you know, you hear in your Haaretz Tzion, you bump into Ram A in the morning, you ask him, and he gives you an answer. And then, you know, a week later, you're in the Chutz Laaretz and you ask your local Rav there, and he gives you... I don't think you have to have what... I think it's crucial to have one Rav all the time. You know, if you have a bunch of Rabbanim you consider competent, and you know, whoever you bump into, you ask, and you assume all of them are competent, that's also fine. I mean, it's like with doctors. You can have one doctor you go to all the time. Or you can go to whoever's available, and it's also good. Provide you have no agenda. You can't choose and pick and choose based upon you want to arrive at the desired result. You have to be able to you have to be able to choose them because you trust them all. But I think both are legitimate. Option number three, and this I say this with great care, and there are points in time when a person has enough experience. I mean enough experience and knowledge. Doesn't mean he has enough knowledge, Torah knowledge. He has enough life experience and Torah experience that he can. Now, and this is something which I can't define. You can identify when a person has. You can identify it because he's never been Torah that he can study sugya for himself and arrive at an informed decision. Even then, he has to make sure that's within certain boundaries. In other words, you have to make sure you're in fair territory. And there are ways of doing it. But no, I do think if a person is not informed enough and knowledgeable enough and responsible enough, in certain cases he can decide for himself. But I say, provided he has all these conditions, and a major consideration is also severity. Because I'd like to explain one point. Halacha is not simply a system of information. That you have to arrive at the right answer. Like the right answer is hiding behind the door. You have to just reveal the curtain and find the right answer. The result of a certain component of the halakhic decision is the authority of the decider. In other words, the same psak given by someone who's recognized halakhic authority is different than by someone who's not. Now, many issues make a difference. Many is black and white answers. But if it's a question which is up in the air, and Rav Moshe Feinstein paskened it. The fact that Rav Moshe Feinstein or Vadi Yosef and not a beginning Rav, not a Kolonik, makes a difference, a halachic difference. And so therefore, so certain issues, when you have to arrive at, certain issues, either the answer is self-evident. If you do the right, if you do the homework, you do the legwork, and you can arrive at the answer, but say the government. Similarly, if you're responsible and informed enough, and you have a certain experience. Secondly, if the issue is not too severe, like I'll give you an example. Erev Pesach Chol V'Shabbos. So do you eat two meals? So the problem with Lechem Mishnah and Shalosh Shudas. So do you eat Matzah Shira? Or do you divide the meal in half? Because you study the sugya, whatever you decide is fine. Both opinions appear to be shonim, gesunta heit. If you have a question though about Naguna, I'm not going to tell you that, because I think that, because there I think authority, it's even if in analogous situation, you have two options, both appear in poskim, but nevertheless, deciding over there requires already a certain gravitas, which the posek has in lieu of the fact that he's a recognized posek. And there are obviously many middle cases, and so on and so forth. Certain shailas, you need the input or the authority of the posek himself. But Tfilas HaDerech, I think, no. Tfilas HaDerech, you know, they're both legitimate. Study the sukkah, arrive at, you know, if you feel that you have enough experience and knowledge, vakasha, and the amount of experience you need for Tfilas HaDerech is not too great. The amount of experience you need for other things is greater. I think there is, in other words, there's a certain area which we can allow people to, it's like a medicine. You know, if you have a question, something's a black and white, vakasha. Other things, yes, if you have enough knowledge and enough experience, you know, by the time you have your fourth kid and the tenth ear infection, you decide what to do, you know, maybe without running to the doctor. But chas v'shalom, you'll have something much more severe. Even if you can do the same research on the internet or whatever, you still go to a doctor for his authority to make the call. Same thing here also. Last question.
You advocated that there should be more of a focus on why, or in the study of Gemara. To what extent do you think there should be a study of how? That is, how different Rishonim formulated opinions, how different Amoraim formulated
opinions. We may have.
What are their backgrounds? Where are they from? To understand more of the well roundedness of the opinion rather than just the logic itself.
You mean to understand the background against which it developed? Or?
The background or in which different Amoraim and Rishonim lived, to understand how they formulated their opinions.
Okay, I'll tell you. I think that it has the same value as understanding how a poet, the background of a poet's life, or his life, his biography. You know, when you read poetry, do you want to know the poet's biography or not? Or when you read piyuti, does it matter to read the lady's biography or not? Or if you're engaging in medicine, how much you have to know the history of medicine? So I think the answer is as follows. Can you practice it without? The answer is yes. Can you analyze the logic? I can dive in from a sitter without knowing the biography of Yossi ben Yossi. And the truth is, I don't, because nobody knows, because it's all shrouded in this great fog of 1600 years ago. But we know nothing about the Kalir, nothing. Certainly, we can still appreciate the Piyutim. You can read Shakespeare without knowing who he was. And even if you wouldn't know that he was within England. On the other hand, I do think that somebody can be a practicing doctor and, you know, you can treat patients with diabetes without knowing the history of the disease. On the other hand, I do believe that for most thinking people, history is a benefit. With historical knowledge, basically, this is described, I view as history of halacha, not halacha itself, or history of learning, history of lumbus, not lumbus itself. Same way history of poetry is different than poetry, and the same way history of medicine is different than medicine. Or biographical background is different. It gives you a perspective. It gives you, in other words, it allows a certain amount of self-reflection of understanding the process. Understanding the process, self-reflection, background. Personally, I feel they're valuable, and I feel they enhance the experience. And it's true in these other disciplines as well. But is it crucial? Is it prerequisite? I think the answer is no. In other words, at the end of the day, I'm not trying to figure out how these opinions develop. I'm trying to understand the opinions as they are. And the reason, in a nutshell, is because I'm not trying to understand the past, I'm trying to understand the present. With Baba Kama, I'm meeting at the present, and it exists in the present. I'm in a dialogue with Baba Kama, so I'm in a dialogue with the Siddur. I'm not trying to understand how the piyutim were created, I'm trying to just utilize the piyut to express my, to approach Kodesh Baruch Hu today. So if I said Slichus this morning, I don't care who wrote this notes, it's my understanding of the process, it doesn't really impact my ability to express the feelings, the emotions within the piyut. So on that level, I don't think it's necessary. and you can study the Ramban, Rizla, Shabba, as long as you know their opinions independent of the biographies. That's in terms of the Talmud Torah, or just the Tefillah. However, I think part of what a human being wants in Olam Hazeh, part of a human nature, part of curiosity, is understanding, and what's part of what we do in the world is try to understand how we interact with the world. Why do I study some physics? Not because I'm a physicist, not because I want to become an engineer, or in other words, we teach everyone in high school, college, basic elementary physics or biology. Not because we think they're going to be doctors or do biological research. We think that a thinking person should understand the surroundings that he's working within. You should understand your surroundings, and it's because that's the human being. I think if you work in a halachic surrounding, you want to understand the background as well. So a doctor who knows history of medicine, I think as a human being, he understands his surroundings much better, and that enhances his humanity. But it doesn't enhance his medicine necessarily, and I think the same is true about a posek who has an idea of history. So it's good for him. It's good for his self-reflection, for his knowledge. But it's not, doesn't define the act itself. That's So, being that it's not the last time, and the Zman is not, despite what I said, the Zman is not yet over, so in a few weeks I'll be back to answer more questions.